Joined here in the studio with Murray State University President Dr. Bob Davies. It's good to have you back, and fall is upon us.
And fall is upon us. It's good to be back and have our discussions here on WKMS and talk about the great things and the challenges and the opportunities facing Murray State. But you're right, fall is finally here. I think we're past the 85-plus degree weather, and I have to admit, I do enjoy the crispness in the air and just that feel of fall and starting to see a couple of the leaves change. It's kind of nice. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not ready for 35-degree weather in February either, but it is nice to see a slight change in the season.
And with fall is a Murray State tradition, homecoming, which is coming up at the end of the month. It's a packed schedule. What are some of the highlights?
Oh, homecoming is coming up and is a packed schedule, and it is a glorious time to celebrate Murray State University, our traditions, to celebrate and welcome back our alumni that are doing amazing things, and also gives a chance for the students to meet with alumni network and see where their future may take them. Homecoming is a wonderful time on any university campus, and specifically here at Murray State with all of our traditions, be it Tent City, be it the parade, be it the 50-year reunion classes that are going on, a lot of what they call affinity reunions going on. Murray State News is turning 90, so they're having a reunion on that Saturday morning, I do believe, over at the headquarters of Murray State News. Football teams having a reunion for their championship year in 2002. Got baseball coming back and a bunch of other things as well. As we think about homecoming, you think about a lot of alumni and what has occurred. At the same time, it's time to celebrate the university. And one of the things that we'll be doing is doing the ribbon cutting for the engineering and physics building on that Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock. A lot of dignitaries coming back for that, and a lot of celebratory opportunities with the engineering and physics being a crown jewel and a completer of the science complex. Walking through it and seeing our students truly interact and within the various disciplines of the Institute of Engineering and to see them interact, to collaborate, again, with the design of the building, with faculty and staff, and it's exciting to see. It's just a great opportunity. The laboratories that are within our engineering and physics, again, demonstrate the high commitment Murray State University has to the academic environment in preparing our students for the future. So that's another thing that we get to celebrate over that homecoming celebration. Lots of pomp, lots of circumstance, but it's, again, about celebrating the Murray State tradition, the family feel that we have here, and also, of course, celebrating the great things that Murray State is doing.
Dr. Damon Williams of the Boys and Girls Club of America was on campus recently, and he spoke about diversity in higher education, and he praised Murray State for student leadership development. Hiring and retaining diverse faculty and staff, that's something we've talked about before, and it's an effort that I know you're quite passionate about. Given racial tensions in the nation, it seems quite on point. In an era of scrutiny and scaling back of higher ed, do you see this as an avenue for growth potential?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that you just put in that very statement that need to be unpacked a little bit. First of all, I'm very excited that we were able to host Damon Williams. And I really put, when we brought him to campus, I purposely put it in the position of a marketplace of ideas. Dr. Williams is a national leader in terms of diversity across the spectrum, and he mentions with the Boys and Girls Club, but he's also had significant experience in higher education. In fact, he's one of the prolific leaders and writers on diversity and equity and inclusion in higher education. When we were going through this a couple of years ago, when we had a couple incidents on campus that we were responding to, I reached out to roughly 50 to 75 of my presidential colleagues, and then also blindly 100 individuals at universities that I respect, and sent them a blind email saying, as president leading the university, who values the marketplace of ideas and wants to make sure that we are open and everyone has access to the marketplace of ideas, what are some of the readings, what are some of the individuals I need to reach out to gain a really insightful, and not just the platitudes, not just the mantra that goes on, but someone who's very insightful, who can lead and help us direct and make sure that we're being thoughtful, mindful, strategic in our efforts. And 80% came back with this person named Dr. Damon Williams. I talked to Cammie Duffy, I talked to SG on our campus about it, and they were like, he is the guru, the leader in this area. And so for that Christmas break, that I bought his books and I read him, and he is amazing, has amazing insights terrific thoughts on the marketplace of ideas and the role of diversity, inclusion, and equity within higher education. And one of the things that really spoke true to me is a quote that he has in the book and talks about frequently, that a commitment of diversity is not just about protecting underrepresented populations as in the past. It really is truly setting a standard for a university to be committed to academic excellence. If you're committed to academic excellence but not to diversity, equity, and inclusion, you're really selling your university short in the near term and also in the long term. By being having a culture that is about diversity, inclusion, and equity, you are preparing your students to compete and communicate on the global in the global marketplace. And I took that phrase very seriously, but I also added to it, especially in light of the environment we are in now. Yes, we expect our graduates in our university to compete and communicate in the global marketplace. At the same time, we want to collaborate. So it's compete, collaborate, and communicate within the global marketplace. And if we are expecting our students to be able to do that upon graduation, we ourselves must embrace further a culture of equity, diversity, and inclusion, and ensure that the marketplace of ideas is open to everyone. And his day on campus, which culminated in the presentation that he did in Freed Court, which was amazing because it was a Friday afternoon, a beautiful Friday afternoon, and it was standing room only. It included faculty, it included staff, and it included students, and they were all able to interact and to engage not only with Damon but with each other. And to hear the questions and to hear the responses and to hear the dialogue afterwards, I think it was a terrific day spent. Dr. Williams spent time with our deans, he spent time with our vice presidents, he spent time with our shared governance leaders, he spent time with specific faculty and staff, and he spent time with students, and really was able to get a microscopic view of Murray State and our commitment to the marketplace of ideas and our efforts in diversity, equity, and inclusion. A student at the end asked him, you know, how do we make sure this continues on? And he talked about the DNA, where you need to make sure it's solid and strengthened, and we're doing that. And I'm very proud of some of the steps that we have taken, but at the same time, we have a long way to go. Right now, there's 27 faculty searches going on. The question is how are we ensuring that the pool of applicants is rich with diversity, not only rich with experts not in depth of professionalism, but rich with diversity and the like. But more importantly, when you bring the individuals to campus and when you make the final selection, you may not hire somebody that represents a diverse nature, but are they going to, through their research, through their teaching, and through their service, advance a culture of equity, diversity, and inclusion? That's the key part. And so we're going to be doing some things to kind of filter that out for not only faculty searches, but for staff searches as well. And these are some just minor adjustments on the front end and also throughout the process to really focus in on to reach out and recruit individuals that have that mindset coming into campus, and then empower them once they get here to help us to retain individuals that represent the diversity, equity, and inclusion that we're looking for. I think it was an absolute outstanding day. Again, as we talk about the marketplace of ideas, this is not an idea that we threw out there. It's something to continue to move forward on. Bringing Dr. Williams to campus really, in my mind, put a whole new layer of the marketplace of ideas for a lot of people to be engaged in and also to fortify us well into the future.
On Wednesday, Governor Matt Bevin and other state leaders unveiled the long-awaited pension reform proposal. What are some of your takeaways from this announcement, looking at some of the highlights that have come out? In what ways will some of the new details here as they've emerged affect Murray State?
Sure. Well, first and foremost, I think it's important to note and appreciate Governor Bevin, Representative Hoover, Senator Stivers, and others for taking this issue on. And it is a difficult issue. This is tentacles that go very, very far in this pension program. It is extremely complex. And so there's a lot of nuances about this. Seeing the proposal, seeing the presentation that Governor Bevin and the others did, again, I just want to congratulate them, if you will, and thank them for taking this on. As we talked about before, pension costs as it relates to Murray State and to our operational funds and throughout the entire state is a significant issue. In talking with the presidents of the other universities, one of them mentioned that, the pension is just one element of the budget. There's other things that we need to discuss. My response was, yes, it is one element, but it is also the driving factor of the entire budgeting process. So it's good to see that there's strong movement moving forward on this. It's also good, too, in relationship to the PFM proposal that was put forward 2, 3, 4 months ago, that they use that as a point in time to inform their process and to be thinking about where they're moving. Because clearly, there's a lot of differences between the PFM report and what has been put forward today. As you mentioned, it's just been released. It's literally hot off the press. I've had several discussions with the university leaders about it, some discussions with the fellow president. It's good that they put this forward, so it has provided some light. It has not answered all of the questions, and there's also, in just reading this through, you know, how questions specifically will have impact Murray State. The bill itself is being drafted, as I understand, or being finalized in the draft. From what I've understand and been told, it's going to be 400-plus pages. That's two reams of paper, and so I know that will be a lot more specific in that type of thing, and that's where we'll see a lot of the details. And again, it's also important to remember that this is the bill that would be sent to the special session, and through that process, there's going to be changes, there's going to be clarifications and things along those lines. Again, I think that what has been presented allows some clarity, for at least a broad-based clarity for our employees, so they can start looking at this and start getting the feel of where it's going to go. There's obviously parts of the plan that you get a sense that over a significant amount of time, moving more and more employees to a defined contribution versus a defined benefit, and that's the trend across the country. And when I say over time, I think it's very important that this is not over 1 year, 2 year. This is over decades of time of moving employees to that level. So again, there's a lot of good things to this. I applaud the leadership of the General Assembly, both the Senate and the House, and obviously the governor, in taking this very important issue on and bring it to this point where they can continue to move forward on this process.
You recently sent a letter to the campus community with an update regarding pensions and other budgetary pressures. In it, you offer reassurance that the university is planning now for the next several fiscal years and facing the issues head on. Can you give an overview of how much Murray State pays into the pension, why that is, and how a potential increase would affect the university, and also some of the considerations in the planning process as this issue persists?
Sure. Well, I mean, we face a lot of cost drivers at Murray State University, and every university faces cost drivers, technology being a major driver of cost increases. We want to make sure, I mentioned the engineering and physics laboratories, for example. We want to make sure we have the most up-to-date technology, and so we garner that technology as quickly as we can. When's it most expensive to buy technology? Right when it comes out. But it's imperative that we have those type of things. And so there's many cost drivers that impact a university. Right now, one of the major cost drivers in Kentucky, and also throughout other states, obviously, is the pension. 5 or 6 years ago, we were paying, actually 10 years ago, we were paying around 12 cents for every dollar in wages to pensions. Last year, we were paying 49 cents of every dollar of wage to the pension. Basically, we're being forewarned that it will be nearly 85 cents of every dollar of wage will be spent on pensions. And that's only pensions. That doesn't include the health insurance benefits and the various other benefits that are associated with a wage dollar right now. And that is obviously a significant increase. That increase of going from 49 cents or 50 cents per wage to the 85 cent mark will represent about $4.7 million in additional expenditures for Murray State University. A few years ago, during the legislative session, there was a proposed cut to higher education, and Murray State's total portion was $4.5 million. So, I mean, this is actually, even though it's not a quote-unquote cut, it is actually more than what was being proposed in that reduction of several years ago. What we're doing, and this is something that we've done over the last several years, is to go through a very robust review of all academic programs and all administrative programs. The provost has provided a rubric, if you will, to the deans, and they're going through their academic programs now. The rubric includes a brief history of the program, the enrollments of the program, the outcomes of the program, the demand of the program externally, but also demand internally in terms of, are they sharing it, are those services and those courses required of other majors, the number of FTE, and a whole sort of looking at that program. What are the future prospects of the program? Is the trend up, down, sideways for the various programs? And that just gives us a significant baseline. That enables us to also map, is this program, how centric is it to our mission, the cost of relationships, and et cetera. This is just one tool. I got to stress this very importantly. It's just one tool in the overall process. Similarly, we're doing the same thing with all of the administrative programs. How does it help recruit, retain, and graduate students? When the program was and the academic unit was initiated, what were the goals and expectations? How have those goals and expectations changed, and are they meeting the goals and expectations? What would it take to enhance this particular unit department to further its goals and expectations? Are there ways to create synergies by merging departments and et cetera? And this is a process that, again, we've gone through over the last several years. And even in good budgetary times, we should be doing this. And this is part of the work with the with Dr. Aaron, our new provost, that we will be continuing to do it, even in good budgetary times, to make sure that you're always remaining relevant. We don't know specifically what will happen with the pension. The special session is predicted to occur in late October, or more likely maybe in early November. What will the outcome be? That's anybody's guess. And then also then we get into the general session of next year, which is a budgetary year. We know that the revenues for the state so far for this year are down as compared to the projected. How will that impact the budget? Will we see a flat budget? Will we see a increase in budget? Will we see a decrease in budget? I'm guessing a decrease in budget, to be honest. I'm very optimistic, but at the same time, I think just looking at and hearing everything that's going on, that the decrease in budget is in operating funds for Murray State and all of the universities is highly likely. And so how are we going to be prepared to respond to that as quickly as possible? So, this review process is teeing everything up so that when those type of knowns, those type of questions are being answered, that we're able to respond as quickly as possible and in a strategic manner. With regards to the budget request, we are working with my fellow colleagues, presidents at the other universities. We are one of the few state agencies, if not the only state entity, that does not receive any increase in budgetary for pension increases. So we are making a request to have a portion, if not all of our pension increases offset by an appropriation. You know, in talking with various legislators, putting forward the $4.74 million for Murray State and the various other ones for the universities, we may get some relief on that, and that will obviously help us out. Capital asset preservation is the next priority for us. Walking around the universities in Murray State is no different than the other ones. We've got a lot of capital needs to shore up on our facilities. And again, we're not looking for a new building, and we're not looking to renovate a building just to make it prettier and shinier. We're talking about basic needs. The capital asset preservation is the second one. And then there is a discussion, do we ask for operational funds through the performance funding measure? That's one's knowing the fiscal stresses, the fiscal conditions. Is it appropriate to ask? Is it not appropriate to ask? It's a very interesting and dynamic question. The first two, I think, are ones that legislators can easily sink their teeth into and say, absolutely, the operational ones, given the fiscal conditions, may be a little bit of a harder sell. But again, we're going to give it the old college try. So again, those are the priorities that we're setting forward. I understand that there's a lot of ambiguity. I live with it every day. We have enrollment stresses. We are working hard to recruit students. I'm visiting every school district in our 18-county district, and also going into our main feeders from Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, Arkansas, Tennessee, and et cetera. So the enrollment is a top priority for me. I really appreciate the faculty and the staff who have partnered with the admissions team and are working to also go into the schools. It's amazing. The admissions team can only get so far into a high school. A faculty member can get into the classroom. I can get into the classroom. Other faculty members can get into the classroom and talk to the students immediately and pointedly about what it's like to be a student at Murray State University. And so to have the faculty members team up with Fred Dietz, our admissions and our admissions team, to go into the Murray High Schools, to go into the McCracken County High Schools, to go into the Paducah Tillman High Schools, to the Fultons, and et cetera. Just yesterday I was in Ballard County doing that very thing. And getting into the classroom and talking to the students eyeball to eyeball, pointing out that many times their teachers are Murray State graduate, is a very powerful statement. Our admissions team can't get there, but our faculty and many of our staff members can. So again, and mobilizing them to help us with the enrollment is something that's being done and is effective. We don't compare applications year to date as of yet, but I know that just talking with Fred Dietz, again, anecdotally, we're seeing a lot more applicants come in, which is a good thing. But we also need to concentrate on the yield. Working with Fred and others to have strategies specifically to increase our yield, getting from applicant to admitted to actually enrolling. working very diligently with him on some of those strategies, and those will specifically roll out in the February timeframe when and beyond when those things move forward. So enrollment's a key issue. You got, you know, again, the cost pressures of various other things. So that's all taken into consideration as we think about the budgeting process. There's a lot of moving parts. As I mentioned in the letter that you referred to, we can control a lot of things. There's a lot of things, moreover, that we cannot control. We cannot control what the legislative session is going to do in the pension. That's going to happen. What we can do is how we respond to them. We cannot control the fact that there's a declining number of students in our immediate 18-county region. We can control how we respond to that by not only being more aggressive and increasing our market share, but also expanding the market, being more aggressive out of the state. We need to be thinking about some ways to enhance our online programs and doing so in a way that we can leapfrog our technology. Talk to several faculty members and they say, oh, we just need to go more online. We need to significantly enhance our infrastructure to do that. And there's ways that we can do that that we need to be thinking outside the box and working with the provost on those very issues. So it's not all about cost cutting. I got to point that out too. It's about how to recruit, retain, and graduate students. Recruiting and retaining face-to-face, we need to expand our marketplace. We also need to expand into the online sphere, and we're doing making some plans to do that. We need to be taking some of our current programs right now and position them more aggressively outside of our area. The Master's in Public Administration program is a great example. Growing program. Right now, I think it's our fastest growing graduate program, but there's also niches, too, that we can very strategically place to make that grow significantly. Our MBA program, our online MBA program, the business school working with our marketing team has just launched a social media campaign to significantly increase the applications and enrollment for our MBA program, which is already a great MBA program. And in 2 weeks' time frame, over 100 different hits to the website, five people automatically have come to campus to check it out. The applications have also increased. And when I've talked to faculty members about that, it's very interesting because a lot of them will say, well, I didn't see that ad. And my response is good. An individual who's 55 years old with a PhD is not our target audience. Someone who is 25 to 35 without a PhD, who has a bachelor's degree, is. And so being very, very targeted in those elements. Again, that's part of the budgetary discussion points is how do we grow revenues? How do we grow our ability to respond as well? So a lot of different dynamics, a lot of different aspects about this discussion. At the end of the day, we will respond. At the end of the day, we will maintain true to our values. At the end of the day, we will find a way to make this work. We will find a way to continue to advance this fine university in very, very affordable ways.
Outsourcing health services has been a topic of discussion. There was some meetings with faculty and staff earlier this semester regarding this issue. What's the status currently on that effort?
The outsourcing of health services is a key focus point as well. And we need to make sure that we also understand that that the current health service program is doing fine. There's a lot of good things about it. The people over there are very good and they're working very hard. This is not an indication of the quality of service or the individuals that are there now. The question becomes is what do we want to offer? How do we offer it in terms of the fiscal pressure on the university? And are there ways to offer in a different way in which we can actually enhance quality and enhance services? And right now we're spending roughly $525,000 in offering the health services to faculty, staff, and students. We are one of the few universities that don't outsource what we call a self-operate the health services. One of the thought processes is that we would be able to partner with an organization that would come in and offer health services and most likely and hopefully expand some of the services that are offered. Primary audience being students, secondary audience being faculty and staff, and in some cases, to help the organization make the ends meet, actually open it up on a limited basis or some sort of basis to the general public. Western Kentucky University has a full-blown program in which they offer to faculty, staff, students, and to the community at all times. It's a very large facility. We may not be able to do that, but there's other things that we could do. In doing so, we to get to that point, we have a committee, the Health Services Committee. They put together an RFP, which was very in-depth, very detailed, very specific, if you will, which is a great thing, but also turned out to be slightly a disadvantage. We did receive two organizations that responded to the RFP, but their responses were again, very specific and minute, and they didn't expound upon them. And so we felt that we didn't have the necessary information to make a decision on what would be best overall for the university. In addition, we called, we had roughly 30 organizations that showed specific interest in submitting an RFP, and they didn't, and so 28 or so did not. We contacted several of those to find out why not, and the response was pretty interesting. It was your RFP was way too detailed, too specific. Therefore, you were asking for things that, on the specific nature that we may not be able to deliver one or two of them, but the other five we could. And so, but the way it was written was like you had to do all of them, and also at the same time, it made the impression that we already knew who we wanted to go with. And so they did not respond. And so instead of rushing into a decision, we're pulling back a little bit and reissuing the RFP, getting rid of some of the very specific details, but providing a very clear understanding of the services we offer, the constituencies that we serve, the services that we would wish to offer, and then give the organization the chance to respond of how will they, in fact, implement a program that meets those needs of the constituencies, meets those needs in terms of revenue producing and those type of things. Again, $525,000 is allocated to health services. Health services is an area that costs never go down. And so as we face these budget times, we either keep the cost at 525, which means decreasing services, or reduce our expenditure of 525, which means a further reduction of services, or find a different way to, again, by partnering with an organization that would enable us to either keep or, and hopefully, again, enhance some of the services that we offer. So we will be reissuing the RFP. It delays a little bit the selection process, obviously, but we will still continue to strive to have the organizations that make the final cut come to campus, probably not this semester, but probably early next semester.
As Murray State continues to explore creative and unique learning opportunities, a pair of faculty recently participated in a national conference to promote experiential learning, which is something we've
Oh, absolutely. I think, again, this is a key component of our strategic plan to have a process in which every student who graduates from Murray State University have a hands-on experience. And Dr. Schultz and Dr. Rogers were invited to a conference to present what we're doing here at Murray State University. And they're both very amazing practitioners and excellent leaders. But to be on that national stage of to talk to other universities who are striving to do some of the things that we're doing, to be seen and to be positioned as a leader in this very important element is absolutely essential. And their enthusiasm and their professionalism and their leadership in this area is greatly appreciated here at Murray State University. And then, again, it's also wonderful to be on, again, on that national stage, to have Murray State be the leader in the area, which is, to be honest, primarily reserved for small private universities and very well-known name universities. And for us to be at that level, I'm just very excited about. So I'm very glad that they were able to do so.
That's all of my questions, and I appreciate your time. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
Well, again, I just want to give an appreciation to our faculty, staff, and our students for all the work that they're doing to continue to have us be one of the finest universities in the Commonwealth, if not the finest university. As I mentioned in the letter a week ago or so, I understand that there's a lot of ambiguity. There's a lot of anxiety. We can control many things. We can't control everything, but we can control our responses to it. Talking to a faculty member about these various issues right before the fall break and going through the whole discussion about the various things. And so at the end, his eyes lit up. He said, it kind of reminds me of the old phrase that they had in England. It was, keep calm and carry on. And I said, absolutely, but I would just change one word. I would say, keep calm and racer on. So with that, go racers and thank you.